Welcome to the Practice Made Perfect podcast. The episode you're listening to today was recorded before the COVID pandemic, but contains valuable information relating to those important non-clinical competencies we discuss daily in cardiology. We realize that the world we know today is very different than our world just a few months ago, but feel these topics will be even more valuable as we begin to negotiate the post-COVID practice of medicine.
My name is Akhil Narang, and I'm an early career cardiologist at Northwestern in Chicago, and I'll be your host today on the Practice Made Perfect podcast as we discuss important skills for leading healthcare teams of the future. I'm excited to welcome to the show today an all-star cast that has tremendous amount of experience in this arena, Ms. Ginger Biesbrock, Dr. Linda Hart, and Dr. Minna Walsh. We are very informal on this podcast, and so for the remainder of the podcast, we are typically on a first-name basis. Ginger Biesbrock has been a physician assistant with the Masters of Physician Assistant Studies program for 20 years, working in cardiology, urgent care, and internal medicine. She served as the chief operating officer of the cardiovascular group at Centra Health, which consisted of 22 physicians and 10 APPs, before becoming the director of operations at West Michigan Heart, a 39-physician practice with 24 APPs. She currently serves as a senior vice president consulting for MedAxiom. Ginger focuses on contemporary cardiovascular workforce deployment strategies, cardiovascular service line design and leadership structures, cardiovascular clinic strategy development, and also care team development and optimization with the goal of creating high-functioning work teams. Welcome, Ginger.
Thank you very much.
And we also have Dr. Linda Hart joining us today. She brings over 35 years of unique clinical practice, education, and leadership with clinical nursing practice in areas of adult, acute care, and cardiology nursing. She has practiced as an advanced practice nurse in cardiovascular care, and as well as completing research in this arena. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Hart.
Thank you so much.
And finally, we have Dr. Minna Walsh. Dr. Minna Walsh specializes in the care of heart failure patients and is an expert in team-based care. She is a former president of the American College of Cardiology. She currently serves as the director of the heart failure and cardiac transplantation programs, as well as nuclear cardiology at St. Vincent Heart Center in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome, Dr. Walsh.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Great. So let's dive right in. So healthcare has undergone radical changes in the last decade, and perhaps one of the most positive things that has emerged is a greater emphasis on team-based care. I think we're all particularly involved in this, and I'm excited to talk about this on today's podcast. Today, we'll explore the necessary skills to design, build, and lead a healthcare team with our subject matter experts. I'd like to start off by asking each of you about your experience with team-based care and what your daily life looks like now. Minna, let's start with you first.
So with regard to team-based care, I think it's probably most important that in my early career, I actually was at the University of Pennsylvania for a couple of years, and I focused at that time on nuclear cardiology and some research. However, once I got to St. Vincent, and I've been at St. Vincent for the last 28 years of my career, I really began to think carefully about how our efforts were being deployed in taking care of patients after hospitalization, especially around first prevention and then heart failure. And so just with regard to team-based care, at our practice, I was the person who advocated for the first nurse practitioner to come into our practice and to help us with regard to team-based care around heart failure. This was a somewhat revolutionary idea at the time. There was actually a lot of pushback, you know, the type of question, you know, why would we need this? What are you talking about? And once we kind of made that first leap, our practice then began to embrace team-based care. So my current practice, as you said in the intro, I'm the director of the Heart Failure and Cardiac Transplant Service at St. Vincent. I lead a team, along with my surgical director, Chris Salerno, a very large team of cardiologists, surgeons, nurse practitioners, PAs, and others. But I also would say that I'm involved on the national level. Our system is part of Ascension Health, and so we're working really hard at the national level to incorporate team-based care paradigms at the Ascension Health level.
It's terrific. It sounds like you've been doing this for quite some time. Very happy to have you with us today. Linda, how
Thanks.
About you?
So it's interesting. When I look at team-based care, you know, with my career, I started as a bedside nurse working, you know, as a team member in areas of critical care in the emergency room. Then I went back and got my master's, and then working as an advanced practice nurse and part of the team. And much like what Minna was saying with regards to her using nurse practitioners and being that visionary, I was very fortunate to have a colleague, Shave Kapadia, who really had that vision of having a nurse practitioner. And so he was in a large practice, and I worked exclusively with him initially, and my role was working mainly in the hospital, and then I would transition patients from seeing them not only in the hospital to seeing them in the office. And, you know, that was back in the 90s, and so that whole notion of nurse practitioner was a little bit new for a lot of people, and particularly patients, but we really worked together, you know, as a team. And then as the career went on, other of his physician colleagues really saw how his productivity was able to be increased, where he was able to do those things that he was educated and trained and licensed to do, because I was now doing things I was educated, trained, and licensed to do. So our model really shifted to where then we expanded the number of nurse practitioners and PAs that we had in our practice. And we were actually, some of us were hospital-based, some of us were office-based, and it really was able to allow us to be much more efficient at seeing our patients. The patients really liked that experience with feeling like they had easier access to the cardiology team, not only with the physicians doing rounds in the morning, but then throughout the day with the APPs. And I think I can't underemphasize the importance that being a member of the American College of Cardiology has played, not only the involvement that I had at the state level and just being very fortunate to have mentors that really kind of guided you along, and the opportunities that the college offers, not only on the state level, but national level to serve, has just been really pivotal, I think, in understanding not only how teams work, but then how hospital systems work. And so what I'm doing now is actually working with organizations on a more national level to look at implementing team-based kind of initiatives.
That's outstanding. It's really amazing to see how things have changed over time. I couldn't agree with you more about the ACC being really the home for all cardiovascular care professionals, and I think that's the beauty of this organization. I'm really excited to hear from you, Ginger, your background as a clinician, and as you transition to a consultant at MedAxiom. Love to hear about your career path and what you do on a day-to-day basis now.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I have a similar background as Linda in that I started clinically practicing back in the late 90s in an area, although we had multiple PAs here, we were a service that was provided to the community physician. So it really wasn't a team as we think about teams now. And then transitioned into cardiology, where I think I was the third APP hired into the practice that shortly after I started merged with another practice, which allowed me to experience the cultural shift of, I've literally had physicians that were incredibly supportive and nurturing and mentoring as I was learning my clinical role, to physicians and other members on the team that we just weren't even quite sure what I did or what we did and what we could bring to the team. So we worked through that, which really provide a lot of insights even now as I do the work that I do and had the opportunity to experience that. But then the other important piece that I experienced as part of my early career is as our team grew, we started having internal issues. So now we were up to about 15 APPs, probably 30 or 35 physicians, and trying to really figure out what that team-based care looked like, and even from a governance and leadership perspective. So at one point we had a mass exodus where I believe we lost about half of our APP workforce. And I was just a member of the team, and I was tapped on the shoulder to say, we need some help and we need a leader of this team. And I believe the reason I got that first job was because I had been there the longest. I was the one that had weathered the exodus. But that being said, given this significant amount of leadership training and mentoring and support, but what I learned through those days was the need for governance and leadership, the need for structure. And when I say structure, and I think both Minna and Linda noted this, the need for appropriate roles and responsibilities and really respecting what everybody brings to the table and creating a very positive culture around that. And so I went back to school. I got some additional training in public health and administration, and then I ran a couple programs operationally. So I learned the operation side of it. And now I'm with MedAxiom, and I've been with MedAxiom for about 6 years. a significant portion of amount of the work that I do is related to all that experience that I had back in those early days of team building and team development and what that really looks like. And so I work with programs across the country that maybe have a team in place already, but just really haven't developed that structure. And so they're either having issues with high attrition rates or issues with not able to take full advantage of that team-based model from a capacity standpoint and really an objective standpoint. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But I've had the opportunity to really understand kind of what's required. And teams, you can't just hire a bunch of people, put them in a room, give them a list of patients to take care of, and expect great things to happen without that structure and some definitions and just some really good leadership within that team. So I'm thrilled to be here today, and I love the work that I'm doing, because the more we can empower those of us that are in the industry taking care of patients and how we can rely on one another, the better patient care we can give.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jennifer. That's really amazing, and your career has sounds really exciting and fascinating so far. And still at the tip of the iceberg on the things to discuss today. When we think about the future of medicine, I think we can all agree that we need to continue to work on this idea of collaboration. I'll give you an example from myself. I'm in the middle of rounding today with my inpatient cardiology team. And not only do we have physician trainees, but we also have pharmacists, pharmacist students, nurses, social workers, case managers, physical and occupational therapists, who are all there every single day with me and my team. And we're meeting and discussing all of our patients daily. And I think we each bring a unique skill set to the table that I think is so very important. So when you are designing a healthcare team, we kind of touched on this a little bit, who are the members that you consider to be part of the team? Maybe Linda, we'll start with you to address this important question.
Okay, great. I think first and foremost, the reason we all get out of bed in the morning and do the work that we do, right, is for the patients. So I think number one is keeping that first and foremost, and thinking, you know, how can we make their care efficient and effective and evidence-based, and how can we include them, you know, in that process? So I think you've hit on many, many members of the team. I mean, not only clinically, you've got, you know, your nurses, you've got your pharmacists, your social workers. There's so many facets to getting people through that whole hospital experience. You've got your physicians, you have, you know, all of your specialists, maybe intensivists, hospitalists. All of those people are really on the team, and you know, being good at communication with those people and really having a culture of, you know, kind of bi-directional leadership, bi-directional communication, so that everybody feels valued and their input feels important, because each little piece of the patient's journey and each person is so important. As a for example, if we've not done any discharge planning, it doesn't really matter that we've done this great care in the hospital and recovered somebody from cardiogenic shock and done all those things, if then we've not done adequate planning and they're going home to an environment that's not safe or they don't have someone to care for them. So everybody is critical in the team.
Absolutely. And I would also mention that part of that team includes people on the administration side to really help facilitate the day-to-day operations. And so I think we all come together for the better purposes of serving the patient. Ginger, I know this is one of the areas you focus on with your role in both clinical medicine and MedAxiom. What skills or tips have you learned over the years that really helped to begin to build that team and that environment that really encourages input from all members?
Absolutely. I appreciated what Linda already brought up, the focus on the patient. Any time that I have seen a team developed that doesn't have a primary focus on the patient, I believe the performance of that team begins to break down. We don't utilize everyone to the things that they bring to the table, any expertise in the background and the license and all of those things. We begin to focus on just getting through the day or processes or tasks. And again, those are all really important. But I think first and foremost, when you're working and building a team or trying to optimize a team, I always go back to what is the objective of care that we are trying to achieve. So is that transitional care? Is that chronic disease management? Is that episodic care? What patient population? And what are the needs of that population? And then who on the team or who needs to be on the team to best meet that need? And that's kind of where then celebrating what everybody brings to the table and identifying, and just as you described in kind of your rounding scenario this morning, you have so many different people, but so many different people with different skill sets. And I'm sure that each patient that you came across probably had different needs, and there were different people on the team that could provide for those needs, and it may look a little bit different. So whether it's a general service, an advanced heart failure program, an EP program, as an administrator, I always say start with what is it that you need to accomplish for this patient population. And then as you list out all those objectives, we can think about then who are the right people with the right skill set, the right license level, the right access, if you will, to best meet those needs. So when you start to put some structure around it like that, suddenly I think kind of that light bulb can go on and you can really begin to develop that team and identify who are the right people. And I think that's the key. Once you've done that work, then everybody has a role and responsibility and it makes sense. And that team should then begin to come together cohesively and really be able to coordinate and collaborate on the care of that patient.
That's terrific. And I think you emphasize that this is patient-centric, and so keeping that in mind, I think, is really, really important and absolutely our main priority for what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. Maybe we'll turn to Minho as a heart failure specialist and a medical director. I know you've designed and led these teams, and as someone who's been on both sides from both the clinical leader perspective and an administrative leader in terms of teams, what have you found to be the skills that are necessary for success? And what advice would you give to brewing people in, who hope to aspire to do that one day?
Great question. I'd like to give two little ACC advertisements first.
Sure,
both Ginger and Linda mentioned the college's involvement in team-based care, and I think it was prescient years ago for the board to decide that, gee, we're a cardiologist-only organization, cardiologist and surgeon, and that we really needed to open the doors of membership to everyone on the team. That may be something that's not well recognized by others today, but that was a big deal. When it was first brought up by past President Jim Dove, he was roundly shouted down at the board, so I want to give him credit for bringing it up the first time. So it's been a big deal, and I think it's changed our organization dramatically and also helped all of us who work in teams to have the same professional home. Secondly, another advertisement, both Ginger and Linda have used the term APP. There are a couple of terms for advanced practice professionals that are really not excellent in the workplace, including mid-level provider and physician extender. So just an advertisement for those who are listening that those are pejorative terms for our teammates, and those are things we really don't want to hear in the workplace. So I'll get off my soapbox now and tell you about my team. I think it's really important as a leader of a team to have an open door where anyone can come and talk to you about any concerns they have. That is one skill. That, along with having a good EQ, is important when you're leading. And we, too, meet every day with our team at 8 a.m., and we go over every inpatient. And at that team meeting, we have pharmacists and often students, as has already been stated, social work, nurses, nurse practitioners, PAs, and physicians. And so the person who's running the team, who's a cardiologist that week, generally leads that discussion. But it's kind of an open door for anyone to offer perspectives on that patient's care and what needs to be done that day. So in that way, we've been able to stay on the same page where we have the same goal for the patient that day. And if anyone has questions, that's the time to raise them. Also throughout the day, obviously. I'm a clinician leader as well. I still work in the hospital and see patients. So I think one of the most successful ways to lead is clinical excellence, and I tell many younger people this when they ask, how do you attain an administrative role? I believe the number one way in cardiology and in medicine is to start with clinical excellence. So if you know your stuff first and you're an excellent clinician, that's the first step to become a leader or attain an administrative role. You're never going to be asked if you're somebody who actually doesn't know what you're doing with boots on the ground as far as patient care. And then I think what's already been mentioned is working up to the top of your license is a strategy on a team to make sure that everybody remains within the scope of their practice, but also happy. So if we have on our team nurse practitioners or PAs who are doing work that our nurses or nurse coordinators, in our case, at the transplant and VAD level, they're not going to be happy. And I'll tell you that I'm proud to have recruited nurse practitioners from other systems in our city because they were actually in a role that could have been served by an excellent RN. And they left that other system because they didn't feel that their skills were being used. So we have to kind of look around at the whole team and see who is maybe not working to the top of their license. And two other things I'd like to mention, in our service, we're intertwined with the surgical service much more than we are with our other cardiology colleagues. And running a successful team along with my surgical colleague, it's important for me to mentor the more junior surgeons as well. So that's something that not all cardiologists need to do. And lastly, I'll say it's important to have some kind of succession planning in place for a team where I know I'm not going to be the team lead forever. And so when I'm recruiting a new cardiologist to join our team, I have to be really cognizant of what that person's skills are, how I think that person might fit into our team, but more importantly, where I think that person might be 10 years from now, because we may have a transition of a couple of our more senior heart failure cardiologists. When I think about recruiting, I have to keep in mind what those more senior people do and make sure that I recruit in order to fill that gap.
Thank you so much for joining us on Practice Made Perfect today. We look forward to continuing this discussion on leading healthcare teams for the future on our next episode. I hope you can join us and this amazing cast of leaders in the cardiac healthcare arena to continue this discussion on our next episode of Practice Made Perfect.